This is just a quick little note for those listening. If you notice that my audio quality will be a little bit better than Steve's, it's because he does not have all of his equipment set up yet. But bear with us, and in time, hopefully, we'll get better and figure this whole podcast thing out. But, anyways, to the actual episode now. Here we go.
You have an Android phone, or you have an Apple phone?
No, I have an iPhone.
You have an iPhone.
I know you have an Android because your texts are green, and I'm like, what is this?
That means they're cheap. That should mean they're expensive,
yeah,
because they're green. But
well, it works out for me, though, because you send, I'm going to go ahead and say this, you send the longest texts in the history of text messages.
I don't text properly.
And it works out, I know, you send the longest, your texts are like a book, and it's like, I love it. But I'll open your text and I'll read them. But sometimes I just like need time to just like think on it.
Yeah.
And so I won't respond immediately, which, you know, my responses are all over the place for some reason. I've been bad about checking my phone.
No, I
got
that.
But then you can't tell I've read it. If you had an iPhone, you could tell that I've read it.
Oh, I see. That's right. And I noticed with the iPhone,
I get away.
Sometimes I'll send my long text to someone, whatever, and then they'll just do the thing in the iPhone where you go, I liked it. So I get a response back that says, I liked, and then it's like my super long text again, back to me.
I thought about doing that because you'll make some points. I'm like, I want to like that, or I want to like exclamation point that or whatever. But then I'm like, if he has an Android, I don't think it'll work. I'll do that next time and see what it looks like.
I mean, anyone that I text pretty much has to know. I always have a lot to say, and I'm a writer.
Clearly.
Like I'm a writer professionally, like at Publix, you know, I'm a writer. I don't know if we should mention companies the way that. But anyways, it's fine. So let's talk movies.
Oh, wait. This is episode, what are we?
Zero.
I don't know. Never mind.
Or negative one. If we maybe we do a negative one, and then we go to zero.
Negative one. Negative, what would zero be?
Zero.
King Kong?
No, zero would be, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So
this is episode negative one of the Film for Theorists podcast.
There you go. That's the working title.
Working title, because we don't want to get sued. We don't know what's going on. I don't know how to patent or whatever. Or trademark. That's the word.
And then I notice a lot of podcasts at the very beginning, they say, so you can, you know, you can message us at Instagram and Facebook at the Film Theorist. We have none of that set up yet.
We don't have any.
Right?
But then literally who's going to listen to this, though, other than like my dad? My dad and my mom wanted to listen to it. And I think like my best friend wanted to listen to it.
And click. What are they supposed to say? Not click. You're supposed to say smash.
Subscribe.
So smash the like button.
I don't think that works with podcasts.
Smash the like.
Smash it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
People used to say like, I'm Chloe and this is Steve.
Chloe and Steve, the Film Theorists. I mean, I like the title because it's like, it kind of sounds like we're scientists or something, which we kind of are.
I'm the farthest. I failed every science class I've ever tried to take.
But we're film scientists. We could actually go with the film scientists, but that'd be a little too on the nose, I think. I like film theorists. I don't know. We'll just go with that for now.
Yeah, if we don't get sued, we can do it. Yeah.
So, I wrote down my list of questions that I texted you. So,
I screenshotted your text because I thought they were all really good. And some of them I don't have an answer for because, like, I just don't even know.
So, that's fine. And I said something about movie experiences that are life-changing, but, I mean, that's a little...
I'm only 18. I haven't had much of that.
And that's fine. It's a little over the top, too. How about if I just say movies or movie experiences that were especially memorable?
I have some of those, obviously.
Yeah. So, well, let's start with for you.
Wait, should we talk about what we're doing? This is a podcast, and we're going to talk about movies.
And
we're going to talk about, like, movies and... Steve and I have always been super into that. So there you go.
Yeah, for over a year, Chloe and I have been talking mostly through text. We hardly ever do. We've never done this.
Yeah, this is the first.
And we don't get in person very often because she lives in North Carolina. I live in Florida. I've known her family her whole life. And we've been talking for over a year to say, I've been kind of bugging her to say, hey, you should start a podcast. I mean, I'll be on it. I'll guest on it. But I was sort of expecting her to maybe do it. And maybe just
co-host.
Be on occasionally. And then like it was about a month ago or so, right? You sent me a thick picture that said, okay, I got my equipment, send me a picture of the microphone. And so you're serious. And so I said,
yeah.
I said, great. Well, you start your podcast and I'll just, you know, be a guest on it. And then what did you say?
You I don't know. Said, I said, you're doing this with me. I'm not doing this alone.
Yeah. That's
this was your idea.
I said, okay.
Well, right. You're like a film genius. Whenever I see a new movie, I text you about it because you just know more than I like. I'm a film student right now. And so like, I was talking to my mom about it. I think one of the reasons why I became a film student, like, why I love it so much is because remember when I was like six and you would take all of the homeschool group families out like camping and we'd right. make short films in the woods.
Exactly.
And they were like yep. really bad.
Oh yeah. That didn't matter.
Awful. And then we'd be we would come home and we would have like a premiere yep. like this is the 2-minute short film we made while we were camping at this lake.
Right.
And like
exactly.
Exactly. That honestly was so fun for me. I think it really like wanted yeah. me to pursue like doing film stuff. So I'll be going that's to a cool. film school in the fall.
Oh, excellent.
So that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I had a statement, so I kind of had an idea for a thesis statement for us.
That, ooh, it's so professional.
So here's the thing. There's so many film podcasts that I listen to that they treat movies like they're books.
That's annoying.
Which, you know, movies and books share, they have characters, they have story, they have a plot, you know, they have, you know, themes. They have all the things that stories have, but books are just words on a page. So you're imagining, right? You're imagining all the images, right?
And yeah, so, it's all in your head.
Yeah, and so a movie is putting those images on the screen. So that's it. That's just the director's vision or whatever. This is, you're looking at what is essentially what could be words if it was a book, but in a movie, it's right there on the screen. So the statement I want to make is film is a visual medium, so let's not talk about movies like they are books. Now that doesn't mean we don't talk about characters and story and theme, but for
example, I'm going to talk about that. I'm surface yeah. level.
No, you're not. And I love talking about that stuff too. But all of that is communicated through what you're seeing on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways. Enough of that.
You have a thesis statement. That's so professional.
Yeah.
I did not prepare a statement.
Yeah. It's like my, what do they call it? The crazy person when they write something. Whatever the word is for that. Anyways.
I don't know. You are a crazy person. I don't know. Yeah. I was going to like prepare a little bit more, but I've been busy today. We found a lost dog.
Oh.
And we went to like every house in the area trying to like figure out who it is. And then no one knew the dog. And we took it to the vet. And then it has a chip in it, and it's not registered.
Oh, wow.
And then so we just are, like, going to keep this dog.
What kind of a dog is it?
I don't know. It's, like, a little...
Mix?
It's so sweet. It's, like, a little, like, a terrier mix with, like, something else. It's got, like, these big ears, but, like, a little terrier body. It's really weird.
Oh, wow. Now, where'd you find this dog? Just in the woods?
In the woods. We were at my uncle's house. We were at my aunt and uncle's house, and it just, like, showed up there kind of, like, wanting assistance. And we're like, hey...
Wow.
And no one knew who this dog was, so I guess we're just keeping it until further notice.
So was the dog scared, or did he just want to jump right in the car with you?
I literally just picked him up, and he was like, all right, let's go.
Oh, okay.
And he's just been having the time of his life.
He let you pick him up. Wow. Wow. That's good.
Yeah, he weighs like 6 pounds. He's so tiny.
So you said he had a chip in him, so it's someone's dog. It's someone's dog?
He had a chip. Someone, yeah, but we like, me and my sister, we went to like 15 different houses that were in the area. It's a little dog. It cannot go far. Okay. And we were like, do you know who this dog is? And they were like, every house said no, except for one guy said, I've seen that dog, but he was clearly like strung out and he was like in the woods and I don't trust him.
And he wasn't like, claiming that dog. He just said he saw the dog.
Yeah. So he could just see it like
right
while it was wandering around.
I mean, in other words, the right thing, not just taking it in, but actually checking to see if maybe it was
someone's dog. Yeah, we went to the vet today. It has a chip, but it's not registered, which is, like, useless. I did knock on this one guy's door, which I think is funny. I need to tell you this. I knocked on this one guy's door, and it was like, did you ever see Silence of the Lambs?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Silence of the Lambs is a great movie, yeah.
Who's the weird... I forgot what the name of the weird guy in the woods was.
What do you mean? In the original movie?
The guy with... the one with Jodie Foster. The guy
with
like,
the
skin suit. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Buffalo Bill was the character.
Yeah.
Buffalo Bill.
I came encounter with a guy. I knocked on the door. I was like, is this your dog? And he came out there and he gave me such weird Buffalo Bill vibes. I was so afraid. I was like, is this your dog? Wow. And he said no. And then he like followed me back to the car. And I was like, I'm okay, really. All you gotta do is say it's like, it's not your dog. It was so scary. I was like, this is my Jodie Foster moment right now. I was so scared.
So he didn't say, he didn't tell you to put the lotion in the basket. Put the lotion in the basket.
I got out of there so fast. I like walked on his porch and there was like 15 bags of garbage and like his porch was like broken. I was like, what is going on? He was scary.
Don't go
knocking on people's doors.
Right. You get that in the woods sometimes, right? You know?
I was in the woods. It was scary.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyways, that's like not even relevant, but we just found this dog. So yeah.
Chloe, tell me about your earliest memories of movies at a theater, like that you can remember, even kids movies.
Well, technically, the first movie I ever saw in theater was the Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, but I was too young to remember that.
Right.
I don't remember that. I was like a baby, but I always would go to the theater and be really quiet. But
you don't even remember it then. Okay.
No, I just was there. I just I was there. That was the first movie I ever was in the theater for.
Yeah.
The first movie I really remember, I think, is like either like Monsters, Inc. or 101 Dalmatians. Wait, how old is that movie? I think I'm making that up. I'm way younger than that movie is.
Yeah.
It was one of
my 101 Dalmatians.
Definitely Monsters, Inc.
It was remade. 101 Dalmatians was remade, right, with Glenn Close, I think. That's the one
I have no
about.
Idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There was an older one. It was an older one that was a cartoon. The live action one was with Glenn Close, I think.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But definitely Monsters, Inc. was one of the first movie experiences I ever had, like, in a theater that I remember. That and, like, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the many movies based on a ride, but which was actually good. Like, there's been very few movies based on rides. There's been several movies based on rides. But only one or two that were decent at all. That's my opinion. Pirates of the Caribbean is one of them.
What are the other ride movies?
Haunted House.
There are other movies that were just based on rides?
Yes, one called Haunted House.
That wasn't a movie first?
No, it was a ride at Walt Disney. And then I thought Eddie Murphy was in that. Wasn't Eddie Murphy in Haunted House?
He was. I know the movie.
Actually, I never saw it, but I just, from reputation,
it was good.
Oh, it was good. Okay. From reputation, I heard it wasn't great, but. Maybe.
I was like 7.
Okay.
So.
All right.
I liked it then.
Yeah. Maybe it was good.
Years.
I don't know. Right.
I don't know. The ride was good though.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm a little older than you. We won't talk
just
about
just a little bit.
We won't talk about age difference yet. We'll let the audience guess, but because they're just listening to voices. They're listening to voices. But one of the earliest memories I remember of seeing a movie was, and this is probably why I like musicals. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Oh, no. We need to have an episode on that because I could fight you.
No, it's fine. No. I mean, you're saying musical as a genre, there's nothing that could be made as a musical that you would like. And that's not necessarily
true.
There's
been like 3 musicals I've liked.
Okay. So there's hope, right?
I mean, I don't know. It was all Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect. Well, is that technically a musical or is that more of a drama?
I don't know.
I think I've seen one of the Pitch Perfects.
I love me some Anna Kendrick.
But now in Pitch Perfect, did they literally tell the story through song or was it just a lot of singing in the movie?
No, they just like go about their lives and then they sing sometimes.
Okay, so it's a technical musical. It's musical. I mean, to me, a musical is really fantasy in a way. It's not like Harry Potter fantasy, but it's essentially, right, who walks down the street and all of a sudden just starts singing? That's fantasy.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, I know. I know. But see, I don't mind it because I'm going in knowing that's going to happen, I guess. But anyways, what I was going to say is one of the earliest movies I remember seeing, and I probably saw movies earlier than this at the theater, but was it was a reissue because this movie was older than that. But the movie Oliver, which was originally a Charles Dickens novel, Oliver Twist, not a musical, a book.
Mm.
And then they made it into a musical in the 60s, like 1968, I think. No, I didn't see it in 68. I was too young. But around the mid-70s, our class in my 5th grade, we actually – this is in the days where, they did things differently in schools. But They literally took our entire class outside, and we walked along the sidewalk. This theater was only about a quarter mile from the school, grade school, elementary school, whatever. And the teachers let us, I remember they let us down the sidewalk, and we walked all the way across a busy street. You know, we had to wait for the lights to this movie theater that's not there anymore in St. Petersburg, Florida, to see the movie Oliver. And I just remember that real vividly. I remember liking the movie. It was definitely a musical, a lot of singing and stuff, but it was dramatic too. And, but what I remember getting out of it was when we got back to class, we all walked back to class, is that part of the Oliver story is these orphan kids, and they have sort of this leader, and he teaches them how to pickpocket. He teaches them how to steal stuff out of people's pockets. And that was only one small part of the movie. But that's apparently what all of us kids got out of the movie, because when we got back, as we were walking up the stairs and walking behind people, we were trying to steal things out of the back pockets. So that's what I remember about Oliver.
I've never heard of that movie.
Yeah, it's a novel. Charles Dickens, you know, wrote...
Well, I know the book, but I've never, like, I didn't know there was a movie about it.
Well, I mean, Charles Dickens, what's A Christmas Carol, you know, Scrooge is his most famous novel, probably.
Well, I've seen those.
Yeah, same guy. But they turned that movie or that book into a musical years later. And I think it won awards and stuff, but it was good. I liked it. And we've seen it as a family too. I have two girls, as you know, Stephanie and Olivia.
Yeah,
and
that friend
my
of
wife,
them.
My wife, Jill. Yeah. My wife, Jill. And all four of us went to see Oliver at like a local theater or something. So it was fun.
Oh, they were like replaying it?
Yeah, I'm talking about, we saw the live stage play of Oliver.
Oh, okay.
Like a local version of it, you know. So it wasn't it wasn't like Broadway or even off Broadway. It was off Broadway. But
just
it was
like very, small town, like little dinky.
Small town, yeah. But it was good. Yeah. You know? I mean, I just enjoy the story. And it was, you know, gave me nostalgia from when I was 10 years old seeing the original musical movie version. So anyway.
Oh, I was just going to say, as we speak, my mom is currently with my aunt and her kids at a Winnie the Pooh play. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Now, are you into like live theater? Are you into live theater or not so much?
It depends. I've seen like Aladdin as a play, and I've seen Beauty and the Beast as a play, and I've seen like The Nutcracker, which that's a ballet, so I don't really know. But,
Yeah.
And I've seen Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. My friend took me to see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like,
oh,
the musical.
Cool.
On like a big, it's like not one of those that you saw where it's like kind of a low quality one. Like it had like huge professional props and stuff. Yeah, it was like in a legit place.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
But I mean, I like it when it's live because that's the only way I really watch musical stuff.
Yeah. Well, I 100% agree. Like the difference between watching a musical on a screen and watching it live, there's no comparison. To me, the live experience is way better. I agree. When it's done well, which even the rinky-dink local theaters that we've seen, to me, I've enjoyed just because they were into it, you know? They were acting
Dracula.
Broadway stars. Oh, wow.
That was a rinky-dink one. That was pretty bad.
Oh. Dracula as like a local theater thing?
Yeah, it was like right down like 20 minutes away from my house and they were like putting it on and it was
That wasn't a musical, was it? Or was it?
No, it was just a play. You just asked about plays and
dramatic play. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a dramatic play and it was bad.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like most plays in general, even off Broadway, tend to be musicals. But I've seen some dramatic plays that were really good too. Yeah. So we saw Arsenic and Old Lace, which was an old movie.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, it's okay. You'd love the story though. So Arsenic and Old Lace, the story.
How did we get here?
Listen, Arsenic and Old Lace. It was a movie in the '50s. But listen to this. Listen to the premise of this Arsenic and Old Lace. It's two old ladies that basically coax older men, gentlemen, into their house, basically to kill them and steal from them. I don't remember what they.
Cool.
Yeah. It's very dark, and for the '50s, it was like super dark.
I love when women kill men.
Yeah, I mean, older ladies, too. Not even younger ladies. Like, two older ladies.
Yeah.
That's why it's Arsenic and Old Lace. Old Lace is like, you know, older women killing these guys that come in with arsenic. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's actually a good movie.
Actually good.
Yeah, because you know a lot of people who aren't familiar with some older movies don't realize that there were some pretty dark movies even back older. I mean, like Arsenic and Old Lace. That was a kind of a very dark for 1950s. I mean, 1950s is all about
absolutely
everything. You know,
everything's happy.
Everything's
good,
happy. You know, hula hoops, and you know all that stuff. But yeah, there was some dark stuff that came out at that time. But anyways. Probably to answer to the all the happiness that was going on. You know, people wanted to escape. Yeah. They wanted to escape the happiness and go into a dark comedy. I don't know. Maybe. But
love that.
Yeah. So that's good. Let's see. What's some of the other questions I got here?
You got a lot of questions.
What about movie experiences that were especially memorable? In other words, not necessarily the movie itself. It could be the movie, but just the going to the movie. You know, and maybe the waiting, the anticipating the movie or waiting in line.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there are many, that kind of thing, like just experiences that overall that were amazing. Definitely one, which I don't really know how you'll feel about this, but whatever year that came out, Hunger Games Catching Fire, like the second one.
Oh yeah.
Like the anticipation for that.
How about 2012, 2013, somewhere around there?
It was something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure.
Maybe later. The first one was 2010. First one was 2010. The second one was maybe 2012. Third one might have been. That was the third one, Catching Fire. Or no, the second one?
Catching Fire is the second one.
Yeah.
And then the third one was whatever that was. And then there was a fourth movie, even though there's
only
three books. But you
Mockingjay, yeah. They made it into two movies, right? Yeah.
You know how they do that, and I hate it.
It became trendy, So anyways, Catching Fire.
Catching Fire, going into the theater, like coming out of the theater from that and being like, oh, I'm just like anti-government right now. And I was really like 10, and I'm like, oh, this is just, like, that was really, I don't know how old I am. I have no concept of time. You'll catch on to that.
You got political at like 10 or 11 years old,
I just think just like that was just like, also just the anticipation, because I had read the books and it was just really exciting.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Star Wars reboot, which I did like. A lot of people didn't.
Yeah,
but I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I think that was a lot of anticipation, especially for my dad, too.
Force Awakens.
Yeah.
I enjoyed them.
That was a great experience.
Yeah.
And then the last, like, really big movie experience I had was Endgame, obviously. Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Because that was, like, the movie that everybody was waiting for. I was in line for, like, a while, and then the theater was full, and it was just, like, it was so fun.
Right. I love that the Avengers went to sort of more the sci-fi end of it. You know, it'll be the time travel, dimensional things. That's what really attracted me. I'm not so big on the pure fantasy side of it, but when it meshes with sci-fi like Iron Man and things like that, I really enjoy that. So
you would love. Have you seen WandaVision? It's the new Marvel show that came out on Disney Plus.
I haven't, but I know I probably should. So it's
listen.
Good.
I watched it and I adore it. Like it's so unique in the way that it does it with like different dimensions, different timelines, type of stuff like that. Definitely.
Okay.
Do you have Disney Plus? Because you should.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I do. Okay. I'll watch it. It's like 10 episodes, I think, or something like that. Or it's one of these shorter series, right?
Something like that. I love, my favorite part about it is each episode takes a style of an era of TV. Like the first episode is like an episode of something in the, like I Love Lucy, like in the 50s. And it's like,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And they
so
move
it's kind
into
of
like
spoofing. It's spoofing sort of an older style. Yeah. I like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
you would really like the way it's done, the way like it moves on through like years. So what about your big movie experiences?
Oh, well, I wrote some down. So one thing I remember is the longest I ever remember waiting, definitely up to that time, waiting for a movie in line, literally getting in line early. And I'm glad I did because so the movie was, and this was 2 weeks before the actual release of the film. And, you know, I'm a little older than you. The movie is E.T. the Extraterrestrial in 1982. So listen to this, Chloe, listen to this.
No, I love that movie.
This is what they used to do. In the old days, like back then, they used to, you could buy one ticket. You couldn't buy them beforehand. You had to buy them at the box office, right?
Can't reserve it on like an app.
Yeah, there was no online or anything like that. You couldn't even call on the phone and say, hey, I want to buy 2 tickets to that movie. You couldn't do that. No, which they could have probably set that up, but they didn't. So I got there to see this movie. I had known Spielberg from Steven Spielberg, the director. I had known him from Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was the year before.
Phenomenal.
And that's actually a good story that I could tell about that movie. But anyways, but just getting in line for this movie. And I think other friends were going to meet me. I don't remember who I went with, but I said, look, if you're not ready to go 2 hours before this movie starts, I'm going. And then I'll just save space in line, you know, like the old, whatever, anything, concerts or whatever you do to do that. So I got there and I was probably about 20th in line. So there was already 20 people ahead of me, you know, so I guess they were real film fans back then. I don't know. And Spielberg was becoming a name. I mean, he did Jaws a few years before that. He did Close Encounters in 77. And then he had a couple flops. He did, do you ever see the movie 1941? It's called 1941 with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. It's a World War II comedy. Yeah.
That's a thin line to walk there.
It was not good. I mean, it was Spielberg, so there was some Spielbergisms in it, but he was trying to sort of do something different, and it was not good. Anyway, so basically they said, listen, you know, Paramount said, listen, Steven, why don't you work with this guy, George Lucas, who did Star Wars, and make a movie?
Yeah.
And so they got together, and they made Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, Spielberg directed it, but then Lucas produced it. He kind of had a sort of creative hand in it too. So anyways, so at that point,
I love Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, Spielberg was a superstar. So then the next movie I was ready. I was only 16 years old at that time, but I was really getting into movies then. And so I got in line for E.T., had no idea what it was about. There was no trailers. There was only I remember there was a full page ad in the newspaper. They used to run ads. They used to run ads in newspapers for movies.
Oh my God.
And that's how a lot of us knew when movies were coming out. Even before television. But then there was television commercials too. But I don't think there was really too many previews of this movie. But there was a big ad. And so anyways, I got in line waiting 2 hours before the movie. And then by the time we were walking into the theater, there was probably, you know, 100 people behind me. So, you know, it was packed out. And so I can't even remember who went with me. Probably my brother. I have a twin brother. Probably Phil Schmerl. I call him Schmerl. But anyway, I get into this movie. It starts. I don't even remember what the opening shot is, but
I can't remember either.
Even at 16, I was not super young, but at 16, this movie was an emotional experience for me. I mean, I really was into Elliot and his E.T. I mean,
yeah.
But I mean, I don't know if I literally cried, but I felt like I should be crying, you know, by the end. I mean, it was very very emotional. When he has to say goodbye to the ship, you know.
Yeah. Spoiler alert to those who haven't seen E.T.
I haven't seen it. 37, 39 years old now, that movie. But yeah, you need to go see it. So yeah, they're not together at the end. He goes away. Anyways, but
oh
Elliot stays on Earth. I just ruined it. I think you're allowed to ruin movies. There's some cutoff where you're allowed to ruin movies that are old enough. That's just what I feel.
What's the cutoff though of when
I
you start
know.
Ruining?
To me, The Sixth Sense, like The Sixth Sense is now over 20 years old. Have you seen The Sixth Sense?
I haven't, but I know there's that joke in The Office TV. No,
the,
I know it. I know
you know
it
the
in
you
the
know
Office,
the ending, even though you haven't seen the movie. Yeah.
Well, because in The Office, there's like where Dwight, he'll say like, I see dead people. And Michael goes, hey, spoiler. And then somebody else is like, it's
funny.
This many years old. And he's like, oh.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so I know the ending, even though I've never seen it.
Well, you need to see it, even though you know the ending.
I know.
It's not the same experience.
I know.
It's not the same experience, because when I went to go see The Sixth Sense, I did not know the ending. So it was
that's
going to
be amazing.
Back to E.T. So, I mean, I was pretty much done. I was done with that story. But, yeah, I mean, I just love that movie. And you know, I've listened to podcasts where guys about my age or maybe a little younger talk about they've never seen E.T., so then they go and see it now, and they're like, that movie was overrated. You know what?
It was fire in its time, though.
Oh, it made me sad. It's not overrated. It made me sad to hear someone say, who's about my age, seeing E.T. and then not being moved by it. But I still am. But part of it.
I still love that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a movie wall in my room. Like, you can, I mean, we have cameras on. Oh, yeah, see, yeah. Like, no. This over here.
There you go.
I don't know how cameras work.
No, I see it. Like, I see it. Yeah.
And E.T. That's is cool. One of them. It's just a bunch of little movie posters, and E.T. is one of them that's on there. Yeah. It's a phenomenal movie, even though the special effects is, you know, dated.
Yeah. Well, that's a subject we could talk about. I mean, in general, like, I think you and I have texted about that. That for me, I'm totally fine. You know, the famous phrase is the willing suspension of disbelief, which essentially means you're watching something on the screen. You know it's fake. You know it's not even truthful, so to speak. It doesn't compare to our reality. So it, you know, it's not real. And in some cases, the special effects, you can see that they're special effects. They're not real. But I'm okay with that. Like, I can embrace a story and effects that are not as realistic, quote unquote. You know, first of all, there's an artistic side to special effects that has nothing to do with matching with reality. That's just my opinion. Like the original Star Trek, right? We've talked about this in the text. Are you a fan of Star Trek in general at all, or not really?
I'm more just kind of indifferent because, like, I've seen several of episodes with my dad. Like, he loves the older Star Trek. I've seen most of the movies, but if I'm never just like, ooh, Star Trek. But, like, I'll watch them. Like, they're fine.
Right. Yeah. Not even the new movies, like the three new ones they made with J.J. Abrams, and then it was a couple other directors, I think. But
I mean, I've seen them. I think they're really good, but Star Trek just is not my favorite franchise.
Yeah. But that's interesting you mentioned your dad, because your dad is really more a fan of the next series, which was called The Next Generation.
Next Generation. He still watches that. Actually, he puts it on.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that too. I don't even know I don't know The Next Generation as well as your father, because I know the original series. Now, I was actually even too young to have watched the original series when it came out. But I watched it in the 70s when it was on incessantly on local TV, like every day. So after school, we'd get home and we'd watch an episode of Star Trek. So just by doing that, I have seen every episode. I think it was only three or four seasons. But back then, a season was like 25 episodes. I mean, a season was a lot of episodes. But I probably have seen, so there's probably been about 100 episodes of the original Star Trek. I probably have seen them all at least five times, maybe. Yeah.
Wow, that's so commitment.
But the point I was trying to make was that the original Star Trek, just someone who doesn't know anything about Star Trek, especially someone younger who's used to the realistic modern CGI special effects, they watch that original series. Some people can't even watch it for more than a few seconds because
it looks so bad.
Very cheaply made. They didn't have a budget.
It looks awful.
Well, so bad is relative. Well, okay, but to me, those are relative terms. You mean it looks awful and bad in the sense that it's not, it doesn't really look futuristic. You could tell it's kind of put together buttons and, you know, cheaply made. But you know what? That didn't bother me when I was a kid, which it would be less of a chance to bother me when I was a kid. But it definitely doesn't bother me now because I watched those stories and those series and those characters. And I'm just totally in that world. And it has nothing to do with the special effects, so to speak, you know. But to compare Next Generation to the original Star Trek, Next Generation special effects were way better compared to the original series. But now, if you take the latest Star Trek's special effects compared to Next Generation, there's no comparison there. Next Generation looks horrible. Horrible in terms of, I say horrible as a relative term again, meaning not realistic looking, you know. So it's all relative. But in other words, I can watch some of these older movies and not be older science fiction movies and not be bothered by it because I know kind of what they're getting at. They're getting at ideas, characters, all the things that make a movie good and not necessarily realistic special effects. Anyway.
Well, I think I sometimes struggle because I think that sci-fi – you asked me if I like sci-fi, and I can say yes, but when I really think about it, like, there aren't many sci-fi movies I really enjoy. Obviously love Star Wars, but who doesn't?
Yeah.
Star Trek is okay, but you mentioned stuff like Blade Runner and Space Odyssey. Yeah. I hated both of them, so maybe I'm not a big fan of
sci-fi. I kind of agree with you on Blade Runner. I mean, I Awful. love I love the world, but it was, and I don't like to, okay, so here's another thing that bothers me about film podcasts. I've talked to friends about this. A lot of people who review movies use the word pacing. Have you ever heard someone say the pacing of that film was bad? Have you ever heard that?
Well, but I can agree with that because it was so slow.
Yeah, I know. And that's, I would use that term for Blade Runner, but I don't like using the word pacing to describe a movie because I love movies where it's...
You don't want me to ever say pacing.
Yeah. To me, that's a word that I don't use because I love movies. Okay, so listen to this. There was a movie that came out in the early 80s. You know who Siskel and Ebert are? Siskel and Ebert, the old film critics? You've heard of Siskel and Ebert,
probably
right?
Not. I mean, maybe.
Okay, well, anyways. Yeah, they're older film critics, but they actually reviewed this movie on their show. Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert were two Chicago film critics. They were the first ones to have a film review show that actually kind of built up an audience. They were on PBS, so it was like educational TV, but it was a film review show. Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert was a little more larger guy. Gene Siskel was taller and thinner, so it was that chemical dynamic. And, you know, and they did the thumb. So you've heard of thumbs up. Like, if you give a movie a two thumbs up, have you ever heard of that?
Well, yeah, that's just,
you know,
like
two thumbs
up. Yeah.
Yeah, you know where that came from? You know where?
From them, I guess.
No, but that originated with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. And they literally, I think they trademarked that or something. I don't know. But they're both dead now, so it doesn't matter.
How can you trademark a thumbs up?
I don't know. I had heard that. Maybe it was a joke. They didn't really trademark it. But yeah, it's become a thing now, thumbs up for a movie. And that's Siskel and Ebert. But anyways, what I was getting at, Siskel and Ebert reviewed a movie that came out in 1981, I think. The name of the movie was, and it was number one on one of their lists, and it was number two. They always did like a top 10 of the year, you know. It was the number one movie on one of them lists and number two on the other. And I saw the movie and I enjoy it, but you have to go in knowing what this movie is. So the name of this movie was called, it's about as boring as the title would indicate. The name of this movie is My Dinner with Andre. That's the name of the movie. My Dinner with Andre. Guess what it was about? Two guys.
Someone's dinner with Andre?
Yep. One of the guys' name was Andre. The other guy's name was Wallace, I think. And there's a few scenes where they're walking or they're driving or they're walking. I forget. I don't remember where it takes place, where they get to the restaurant, but they basically get to the restaurant, have a meal, and they talk. That's it. That's the whole movie. It's My Dinner with Andre. I don't think the camera ever leaves. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I've kind of looked for it. I kind of want to watch it again.
I need to watch it now. I'm interested. You sold me with Dinner with Andre.
My Dinner with Andre. Yeah, it's basically, and Ebert and Siskel, when they reviewed it, even made fun of the fact that they loved it. Because it's like, how can we love a movie that's essentially a 2-hour dinner conversation? That's it. That's all it is. But they did. But it's just what it is. It's what they talked about. You know, you're really engaged. Just like you and I. Hopefully our audience of 5 million followers that we're going to have in a week.
Are totally
engaged to what we're saying right now. But anyways.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. You know, the three listeners we have are super into this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I regularly listen to podcasts that are 2 hours long. Some of them, you know.
I can't deal with that. But I don't listen to film podcasts, which seems hypocritical.
Oh, well, I got some recommendations for you.
I know, and you gave me recommendations, but I really mostly just listen to the comedy. Like, I also listen to true crime. Like, I listen to My Favorite Murder, and I listen to, like, conspiracy theories, and then I listen to Conan O'Brien's and Dax Shepard.
Which one?
Dax Shepard, I got it. I listen to his podcast.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. I gotcha. Yeah, I've heard that's good. Yeah. But anyways, My Dinner with Andre, yeah, all-time classic. Just kidding. I mean, I liked it. I wouldn't say it was a top. Like, it came out the same year as Raiders of the Lost Ark. That movie couldn't be any more different than Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark, a world-tromping archaeologist going all over compared to a 2-hour dinner conversation. I mean, you know. But, I mean, movies have their place. You know, different. I could be in the mood for movies. Now, I can't necessarily watch a movie like that every day, but.
Well, no.
I would be intrigued. I would be intrigued by a movie that's essentially hardly anything happens, because the conversation could be interesting.
Well, isn't that the whole joke with Seinfeld?
Yeah, there you go. Jerry Seinfeld.
I mean, the whole joke with Seinfeld, a show about nothing, and that did so well, so people like
it. Yep, exactly. Yeah, he's said that. Like, people have asked him, what's your show about? And he says, nothing. Yeah.
Enough? It isn't. I watched five seasons of Seinfeld, and I got bored. Hate to say it.
Yeah, but you know what? He's kind of making a joke to me. It's really, it is about something, but what he means is, we're not trying to make a big political statement. We're not, like, focusing on any particular moral or ethical or psychological issues. But they kind of are, just in their humor. That's just what I think. There's social commentary in Seinfeld, to a degree. It's not, like, deep. You know what I mean? Anyways.
Yeah.
So.
How did we even get here?
I don't know.
Not good. We talk too much.
I can't get back to the questions. Well, here's a question. Like, why do we love horror? And before you answer that, let me just say that I've listened to so many film podcasts where the word horror is a bad word. Like, oh, I don't like horror. You know, how can you watch horror? But you know what I mean? It's an awesome genre because there's so many things you can do with it. And for me, it's the intensity. Like, you know, I want my art to have an intensity to it, meaning I want to feel scared. I want to feel sad. I want to feel depressed. I want to feel all those things.
But not from jump scares.
Not from jump scares. Exactly. Yeah. Because
it's cheap.
Exactly. Yeah. We both agree with that. Yeah. And you know what? There is a trend away from, like, at least the more intelligent horror directors and filmmakers that have been making movies. Ari Aster, who did Hereditary and Midsommar.
Absolutely. I adore him. Those are my favorite horror movies, are both his.
Yeah. And there's basically no jump scares. Technically, he says there's a couple jump scares in Hereditary, but I don't really see it. I mean, to me, a jump scare is something that has an impact sound and a screech, and, you know, it's just really trying to shock you, you know.
I think his are, like, the camera pans and there's, like, something there, but he's not one to put, like, loud noises in his films.
Exactly, yeah.
But I didn't feel jump scared in his movies. Like, I watched Hereditary and Midsommar with my parents, which I wouldn't recommend to anybody who's going to watch those movies with their parents. Yeah. They're not going to watch it with their parents.
Right. Well, especially parents that maybe aren't as open-minded about, like, kind of severe horror. I mean,
that's like, those are some of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's shocking. I mean,
and I loved it.
Yeah, Ari Aster is into with Midsommar. You saw Midsommar too, right? Midsommar.
Yeah.
Yeah, he calls that movie his basically, what does he call it? His breakup film.
Yeah, because he wrote it after he broke up. He had, like, an ex or whatever.
I guess. Yeah, I don't even know the story behind it, but just the idea of calling that movie a breakup film, like, when you hear breakup film, you think, you know, romantic comedy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and he's making essentially a dark, there is humor there. It's, to me, it's dark humor. That whole cult, I mean, I'm kind of chuckling the whole time because it's so ridiculous, you know.
It's so bizarre. Yeah. It was very shocking. A lot of it was just, like, shocking. I felt shocked when I was watching it.
Right.
But I do see how it's a breakup film because he wrote the film when he was going through a really bad breakup.
Okay.
And so you can notice how Danny, the character played by Florence Pugh, and then her boyfriend in the film, throughout from the beginning till end, were just, like, drifting. Like, they were never really that solid, and they were just drifting. And then, you know, in the end, when, you know, she just lights him up.
Yeah, and you know, there's theories on the internet about that movie. Talking about film theory,
there's so many.
Yeah, the idea that it was all kind of planned from the beginning, you know, that she was sort of the chosen one. I don't want to give that movie away so much because if people haven't seen it, Midsommar, Midsommar. I don't know.
Well, it's Midsommar because it's, like, Swedish.
Midsommar.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you guys are into horror, that's a really good movie, I think, anyway. And so does Chloe, right? You know,
I adore that movie. I love that movie, as well as Hereditary.
Yeah, he's actually coming out with a new movie. Well, he's working on it. I don't know when it's coming out, but it's a weird title again. Oh, it's called Disappointment Boulevard. I don't know what that means.
I already love it. I'm in love with it already.
Yeah, he's kind of odd titles, but So.
Well, he works a lot with A24.
Right.
And, like, I think A24, which just makes me sound like a basic film student of the 21st century, but that is my favorite.
Yeah.
Film, like, that's my favorite company. I think most anything they produce is, like,
I
adore it.
I mean, they're at the top of their game. I mean, just about any movie that they release has some value, at least. It may not be great, but it's usually very good. Yeah.
From 2013 up until now, their movies have been, in my opinion, flawless. Before then, they had stuff like Spring Breakers, and it was like, what is that? So I don't recommend anything before 2012.
Oh, okay. I never even saw that. Yeah, I guess maybe it took them a while to kind of sort of figure out who they were as a company and picking the right films and the right filmmakers. Yeah.
So. Yeah, in the beginning they were doing kind of like teen, like Spring Breakers was that one about the girls in all their bikinis and they go and get drunk.
Right. That's
Don't, like, anything after that is amazing. Don't go before that. It gets bad.
Yeah. Well, I did want to talk about one other thing, and I know I've been texting you, and I don't, you know, some of these terms might have been new to you even, but, I mean, you being a sort of a budding film student. So I wanted to talk for just a minute, and this will sort of frame maybe comments that I'll make in the future for movies or whatever. But I sort of started out by saying, I'm bothered by film podcasts where they don't really talk about what's going on the screen. They just talk about, in other words, how the camera's moving. You know what I mean? What the director's drawing your attention to. So the idea of, so there's sort of two ways that any scene is portrayed by any filmmaker. And these two terms were kind of, started to become popular around the 1940s and 50s. And actually in France, there was all these film critics in France who came up with this terminology that made its way to America, and Spielberg, Lucas, George Lucas, Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese, all of these guys essentially worshiped these French film critics and filmmakers. But André Bazine, Jean-Luc Godard, not Jean-Luc Picard, but Jean-Luc Godard, and François Truffaut, those three. So François Truffaut and Jean-Luc Godard were actually filmmakers too, but they also wrote about film. But André Bazine. So these two words, expressionism and realism.
Yeah. Well, I talked to you about this.
Okay, yeah. So, and another word for expressionism is, I guess, it's called imagism. So it's all about the image. But
yeah, I don't like that as much.
Yeah. So the difference between realism and expressionism, and I'm sort of more telling, you know, the film audience who may be listening to this that is used to just, who's used to film podcasts that only talk about story and characters and theme, which is all interesting stuff. But the difference between realism and expressionism, the way I could put it is, so realism is essentially don't draw any attention to the camera at all. Let the camera be still. Let the things going on the screen just happen, and there be no sort of no fast close-ins, a lot of camera movement. Whereas the expressionism, an expressionistic filmmaker or director, is one that wants to draw attention to the medium, like close in, you know, moving the camera around, moving off the action to something else. So anyone who can understand those two terms when watching any TV scene or film scene will sort of think about that scene in a different way. And so the example I would give, it's not from any particular movie, but just how would someone film, say, talk about a dinner conversation, right? My dinner with André. But how would someone, a filmmaker, film, say, a guy and a girl talking at a restaurant, sitting at a table or a booth, right? So the realistic filmmaker or someone who's in the school of realism would essentially show the two of them together sitting down, right? Then when one is talking, the camera would just show that person talking. You know, usually there's a little bit of you could see the hair or the back of the head of the other person, but you're only focused on that person. So when they're talking, the camera's on them. And then the other person starts talking. So then the camera shows them back and forth. That would be realism, meaning we're not really, the camera, the filmmaker is not really adding anything to the scene outside of just the dialogue that's being spoken. And maybe the expressions of the people. But what if, so this is when a scene like that would move toward expressionism. What if the director decided, and this is subtle, but as one person's talking, that person is talking, he's still talking, but then the camera is showing the girl listening. Mm-hmm. Now the girl could not be changing her expression on her face. But why did the director decide to show the girl instead of, well, the guy is talking. Why isn't the camera on the guy? You know, and that's a subtle thing. But, I mean, psychologically, it does something. So what it does to mm-hmm. the viewer is, I wonder what she's, how is she receiving what he's saying? What is she thinking about? Now, it could be more on the nose where the girl, like, wrinkles her nose or makes a face or something. But you don't see that all the time. Sometimes it's subtle. And the director is just saying, I'm focusing on this girl right now because what the guy is saying is hitting her in a certain way. Now, that's a subtle thing. But now, let me change it up a little bit.
Oh.
Let's say the conversation is going and they do a little of that. They might show the girl when the guy is speaking. And then all of a sudden, the director... Now, the conversation is still going on. But the director decides to shoot a coffee pot that's whatever, that's making coffee.
This reminded me of Taxi Driver.
Okay, there you go. Well, Martin Scorsese is very much an expressionistic filmmaker. Now he will have realism. Every movie has both. For the most part, some movies have more realism, some movies have more expressionism. Quentin Tarantino, very expressionistic. He will draw attention to the camera, throw big words on the screen, you know, impact sounds, that's a expressionistic. But anyways, yeah. Well, what I'm getting at is, let's say the camera is showing an object in the restaurant. Why did the director decide to show that object? These two people are talking. Why isn't the camera just sitting on these two people's faces talking? He's now showing a coffee pot. What is he trying to say? Now, you know, some people may, who are not interested in that kind of stuff, might say, I don't know, it's just BS. Who cares? Well, you know what? Someone does care. You know who cares?
It's you.
No. Well, yeah. The director cares. The director is showing that object. I don't know why. Or another classic example is, you know, they're talking and then you see out the window and then the camera, all of a sudden, they're still talking. This is more on the nose, but the camera starts going out the window, right? And showing what? A car driving up, a person, whatever, you know. And it could be that these people are hiding from someone and then, of course, the camera's, that's more story. The camera is showing a car coming up because he's coming to get these people. But so anyways, that's expressionism, realism. That's sort of the dichotomy, so to speak, the duality of how you make a movie. Every scene has aspects of realism or expressionism or imagism. So there you go. So what do you think?
That's good. Well, good. I think that you could be a teacher. Because I had a film teacher who talked a lot like that, but he made me watch Taxi Driver like 3 times.
Oh, there you go.
Because I don't really like the movie, but I've seen it several times.
Okay.
Like, it even got to the point where I had it on while I was like in the showers. I was like listening to it, but that reminds me a lot of like the scene where he's in the diner and the people are having conversation, but it's only focusing on his glass, and it's like that. I had to write a whole freaking paper about that.
But I mean, you know, so like film classes like that, I mean, I didn't make this stuff up. This is going way back. And I did. Pretty much the same age as you. I started taking film classes. So let me tell you about that. I used to write film reviews in high school. I used to think I knew everything about movies by the time I was 17 years old, I thought I knew everything about movies. When I took my first film class and sat through my very first class of understanding film at the University of Florida, I realized I was stupid and knew nothing about movies. That's just my.
I'm so scared that's going to happen to me.
No, but it's good. It's eye opening. Like if you take film classes, your eyes are going to be opened. And you know, this is something they'll probably talk about at some point: expressionism and realism. And you know, I actually got when I was 20 and I had been through some film classes and stuff. I remember seeing Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Did you ever see that?
I hate that movie.
Oh, okay. That's all right. That's okay. I loved it. But now, what don't you like about Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
It's just, it just is irritating. Okay. I think Ferris Bueller is a lame main character.
Yeah. He's a jerk. He's a total jerk.
He is.
Yeah, yeah.
He
yeah,
is. He's
yeah.
mean.
Well, you know who backs you up
it
on that?
Stupid.
You know who backs you up on that? Gilbert Gottfried, the comedian. He has a podcast. It's a very, very popular podcast.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a comedian, but it's not so much a comic podcast. It is an old film. It's an old Hollywood podcast because him and his co-host, Frank Santopadre, who's not real famous, but he's a writer and stuff, he's real smart on movies. And so the two of them kind of talk about old movies, but I mean old movies, even like back to the 30s and 40s. But whenever Ferris Bueller's Day Off comes up on the show, Gilbert Gottfried's like, I hate that movie. He's like,
it's not good.
Ferris Bueller is an a-hole. You know, he hates, he just can't sit.
It is.
In fact, on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, they had Matthew Broderick on the show. So Gilbert Gottfried couldn't even wait. He's like, okay, I got to get this off my chest, Matthew. I can't stand Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You were a jerk in that movie. And Matthew Broderick's like, I kind of agree with you. I mean, he goes, I liked the movie, but yeah, my character was a jerk. I totally agree.
The teacher is just doing his job and people are just trying to have a parade and he's like hijacking it. It's like, you can't just hijack a parade.
I can see that. Yeah. So it's like you personally were sort of offended by, cause
I wasn't offended. I was just annoyed.
Annoyed. Okay. But,
I was like, this is lame.
What I was getting at is talking about this whole film talk that we were talking about, especially that there's a scene in that movie, though. I don't know if you remember, but there's a scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, that movie's a little weird, but then it gets really weird. Do you remember the scene when they go to the museum? I don't know if you remember that.
Probably not. It's been years since I've seen it because I didn't like it. I'm not going to watch it again.
Yeah, that's fine. There's a scene with him and his best friend Cameron and his girlfriend Sloane, I think. They all three of them go to this museum. But it's really weird. Like, John Hughes is the director, and he's obviously got a sort of an expressionistic kind of slant to him in some of these scenes, and this scene specifically. So they're in the museum, and all of a sudden they're just sitting there staring at these weird abstract paintings, you know, and you know, John Hughes just focuses the camera on some of these paintings with really very little dialogue. It's almost like a silent film, and there's probably music and stuff. But there's very little dialogue, and John Hughes is just showing all these weird paintings, and I didn't necessarily know what to make of it. I mean, I was 20 years old when I saw the movie, but I knew that John Hughes was kind of trying to say something with that, and even if he wasn't, it doesn't matter. So here's another thing that I like to say. Even if a director intends to do something, he may not be successful, or he could be doing things unintentionally. Like, once art is out in the world, right? Whether it's a painting or a music or a song, right? Or a movie. It's now for ours to interpret. And if we think this scene means this, but the director has come out and said, no, it means that. That doesn't mean you're wrong. You know, you can interpret how you want. But anyways, I remember walking out of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I saw it with my brother and a friend who I didn't see too many movies with. And I remember walking out of that movie and saying, one of the first things I said to my friend was, what'd you make of that museum scene? That was so weird. Like, I wonder what John Hughes was trying to say with that. And it actually angered my friend. He's like, who cares? You're stupid. What do you care about this museum scene? Like, he had no...
Why was he mad?
Yeah, he had no interest in talking about anything that was deep at all, I guess. At least about this movie. I think he was pretty smart. But I guess I anger people sometimes because I want to talk about stuff like that. You know,
I mean, I don't really think that Ferris Bueller is a very deep movie, but
I agree with you. But that scene was, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just stupid, you know. But
maybe he was just filling time.
Maybe it's just filling time. He's just trying to be abstract, but really not saying anything. I don't know. But anyways,
maybe I don't really like Matthew Broderick because I watched War Games movie. I hated that too.
Really? Oh, you don't like War Games? Okay.
I had to write a paper on it for my film class, and I just didn't. I did not like it.
Well, maybe
I watched it and I was like, "What is this?"
Having to write the paper made you not like the movie, maybe.
No, because I had to write papers for a lot of movies, and they were all good.
Okay.
But some about War Games and Taxi Driver, I didn't really like.
Okay.
In that class, but War Games, I thought was dumb because.
Would you like to play a game?
Yeah, I don't know. It was just boring, and then it was just kind of like, it felt really I don't know, the dynamic of between, like, the girl played no...
Yeah, Ally Sheedy.
Like, important role in anything. Because there's this test, it's like, does the female character...
I agree with that.
Yeah. Does the female character do anything...
I agree with that,
...that's
yeah.
not about love interest? And it's like, no. Yeah.
And I know, you know, being a female, and you're into sort of feminist issues, and we could actually talk about that kind of stuff in later episodes. Because I appreciate, actually, the feminist sort of interpretation of things. Because I know you and I have talked and texted about Final Girl Theory and horror movies and male gaze and all that kind of stuff. So we'll get into
it. Oh, it's so annoying.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I thought you're into Final Girl, though, that whole talk, right?
Yeah, but just like the male gaze, it's just like, it's so irritating.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting. You know, it's the concept of what is the director saying. But, you know, there are also female directors who have done horror movies too, and that's always interesting too, you know.
I don't know if I've ever seen a horror movie directed by a female.
Did you ever see one of the best ones in the last 10 years was a movie called I just forgot the name of it. She made the movie The Nightingale, which is a totally different movie, but it's more thriller, sort of rape revenge movie. But The Babadook. Have you ever seen The Babadook?
Oh no, but I've heard of it.
The Babadook. Oh, it's awesome. It's great, and it's total female. Noted. Female perspective, I mean, because in the sense that it's a female director, you know, and so anytime there's a female director, especially in an intense movie, it's always unique, you know, especially if the director.
I love female directors.
Yeah, very competent. I mean, Sofia Coppola, Francis Ford Coppola's daughter, I guess, she's made a bunch of movies, not horror movies, but anyways. So, well. Man, we've been.
You know, we have questions.
I know we have questions, but that was okay. I mean, we pretty much covered them.
What are the questions that are remaining?
Well, I put favorite directors and filmmakers. We've talked about some of them. You know, what are some of your other favorite directors or filmmakers? You said Ari Aster, right? Hereditary.
I do. He's my favorite horror director. I really have been into Taika Waititi. You know, he did Thor Ragnarok and he did Hunt for Wilder People and Jojo Rabbit. I love him.
Oh, I need to see Jojo Rabbit. I never saw it.
Before. Oh my God. Yeah. I own it on DVD. I have it right on my show, Blu-ray. It is so good.
All right.
Now that is a World War II comedy. We talked about that earlier. That's like a thin line. It's kind of like, if it's a war comedy, it's kind of like iffy, but he did it flawlessly. I adore that movie.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out. Yeah. I've heard good things about it. I think
definitely
it
for sure. He plays Hitler.
Oh, okay.
He's in the movie, kind of like.
Oh, okay. So he directed it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Or Hitchcock. Hitchcock kind of started that. Well, no, that's not true. I mean, there's been other directors before Hitchcock even that were in their own movies as cameos, but yeah. But yeah.
I mean, he is a major character. He plays Hitler, so.
I mean, you want to just wrap it up because, you know, we
I mean, we've been going for, it's an hour, and we were like, let's do like a 15-minute episode, and introduce ourselves.
I had a feeling.
It is now an hour.
We'd be able to just go on and on, because there's so many different things to talk
about. You and I can just talk about forever. Like, when I go down to Florida for Christmas, you and I just go on for hours.
Yeah. I mean, we were hitting different topics, so that's why it was so easy. But, you know, it might be a little harder when we talk about just one movie, but hopefully.
I think you can manage it. You talk a lot.
Well, like Godzilla versus Kong. So we were talking about maybe the first actual official episode being to talk about Godzilla versus Kong. So
excited.
That's a good one. But I'll come with notes and you come with notes. You know what I mean? Cause
I'll try to get notes.
Yeah.
I'm bad at note taking.
I haven't gotten HBO Max yet. I saw it in the theater. I saw Godzilla versus Kong in the theater.
I watched it on HBO Max.
Yeah. And you liked it, right?
Yeah. Well, actually beforehand. So on the day it released, I went and binged Kong Skull Island and Godzilla and Godzilla's King of Monsters Prepare, because I've never seen any of the movies.
Okay,
I've never seen any of the Monster Universe movies. Like, I've never. So, I prepared.
This is a little preview for episode one. So, how would you say Godzilla vs. Kong compares to the first two Godzilla
movies? I didn't really like King of Monsters as much as I did the actual Godzilla movie. So, with this one.
I agree.
Godzilla King of Monsters movie was kind of boring. It was like, what is even happening right now?
Even though there was a lot of monsters in it, it didn't feel. It
felt boring to me.
Yeah, to me there was no emotional. For me,
I felt no attachment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This movie, we're getting into episode one. So maybe it was.
We can't make episode one. Oh, point is, I liked Godzilla versus Kong because I think King Kong is cute, and I like Godzilla.
Yeah, I mean, the director Adam Wingard. Now you saw, you said you saw The Guest, right?
I did see The Guest. Well, you told me to watch The Guest to get a feel of his,
right.
Which made me, oh, I have things to talk to you about. We have to wait for episode one, though. I have things to say.
That's fine. Yeah. And by the way, did you know that, the last thought, did you know that Demon Slayer movie is coming out? Have you seen that?
For anybody listening, Steve has never watched anime until I told him to watch Demon Slayer, because I watch anime pretty regularly.
I'm trying to get a little into Chloe's world by watching some anime, and I've watched now 4 episodes of Demon Slayer, and I like it. I like it. I love the stories. The characters are interesting. The only problem I have, which I think I mentioned to you, it's still true 4 episodes in, is that it's a little overwritten.
Most animes are, but it's the English translation.
Okay, that's what I was feeling. Like, I almost wish I could speak Japanese and then watch it in the original Japanese. but
it would probably be so much better.
I'm not about to learn Japanese at this point, but
yeah, you gotta, you need to binge a little bit though, because it gets really good. Like there are like three different arcs in this show, and my like I think the last one's my favorite. So you definitely need to get,
right.
Cause you're still in the buildup.
Oh yeah. I love the idea though, that he is taking care of this, of his sister who essentially could, you know, rip his face off. I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. If he allowed her to, you know, taking off the Silence of the Lambs mouth guard or whatever.
Freaking guard thing, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, I like that kind of stuff. So, and it doesn't hold
you
back.
Know,
it's violent. It's violent. I mean, it doesn't hold back, even though it's animated.
A lot of animes are violent, right. Which is what I liked about it. I like watching anime. I kind of started watching anime after I watched Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill, because
there you go.
It's a similar filming style with the
right.
gore.
Yeah.
That's when I first, because I watched Kill Bill a year ago ish,
right.
And then I had watched anime before, but I really got into it after that because I liked the
style.
Yeah. You know, you started watching anime, and Olivia, Steve's daughter, messaged me. She was like, "Why are you getting my dad on anime right now?"
Yeah. What are you doing to my dad? What are you doing to my dad? Yeah. That's pretty funny.
I mean, it's good. Yeah. Whatever. She can suck it.
Yeah. That's funny. The thing is, I have probably a wider taste in art in general than just about anyone I know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, music, movies, I like musicals, and I like, you know, extreme horror. So, you know, it's like those are the two opposites.
I don't think I don't have a wide enough taste. I don't have the same wide taste as you do. I don't think.
That's fine. I mean, most people don't. Like, well, your sister, you know, your older sister does music, writes her own music, and it's a kind of Appalachian clawhammer banjo music. And I love that.
And I don't like it. I do not.
Okay. But see, I love that. You know, I love anything where there's a passion in the particular style, especially from who's performing it, you know. But I love that, and I love death metal. So, you know, I mean, in terms of a style.
I like death metal.
Yeah.
And I feel bad because she's my sister, and she's, like, a professional musician, and
that's
her, like, job.
Right.
And I just don't like any of the music she does. And she's probably going to hear this. I'm sorry. You know I don't like your music.
You know, I got her album. Knows. I got her album sitting in the background right there. It's a great album. I love it.
I know. And I took the picture. I took the picture of her that's on the album, and I made her music video, and I cannot stand the song that I made the music video for, because making a music video for someone like my sister who is technologically challenged is the worst. Yeah.
She's a talented musician though. I love her music. So.
She's very talented, but she's a pain to work with.
I'm being honest. You're too close
but
to her.
She's my sister,
yeah,
so I can say that.
You're too close to her.
Yeah, she's my older sister.
So, all right. Well, I mean,
how do we even get here?
Do we want to sign off? I don't know how you sign off. You could say, you know, punch the like button, but you know, I'm actually on Twitter and on Instagram, but
I'm not on Twitter.
Well, I feel like we should set up the Film Theorist Instagram. Can you do all that? Set up a film theorist? I'm asking you
Steve. I asked Steve to join a podcast and co-host with me, which I don't know why he wanted to just be a guest. You see how much he talks. But literally, I was like, he wanted me to co-host, and he's like, so you can do all the technology, and I'll just show up. And I was like, okay.
I'll just be the talent, quote-unquote, the talent. I'm just
he's the talent. I do all the behind-the-scenes. Like, I'm going to have to edit this. I don't know how long it'll take to edit it, but I'm pretty good at editing, so.
Yeah. Well, we kind of, we had a good string there where you probably wouldn't have to edit a whole lot. You know what I mean? It was just the beginning.
No. I think editing for podcasts, I can see the like, sound waves or whatever, like, on the bar, so that makes it easier if you can visually see the sound, too.
And I'll send you, I suggested a couple music clips for our intro music and stuff, so I'll send that to you.
Yeah, I never listen to them because I'm a procrastinator, but I'll listen to them now, because now that we're actually doing it.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, so I'll send you, so can you take like a WAV file and just cut out what you want from it type thing? You can do that.
I mean, yeah, I can do pretty much whatever I want.
So, I mean, I sent you a song, I'll tell you, use from this like 225 to 242 or whatever, use that, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then your sister has,
didn't you write the song,
her song, what's the last song on
Reuben
her,
in the
Reuben in the garden. I love that song, and it's like, what's amazing about it to me, it's very
I've never heard it.
Oh, the last song is great. But to me, what's great about it is like the first 3 minutes are instrumental. It's like you would think it was an instrumental track, because the first 3 minutes are completely instrumental, and I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, oh, it's an instrumental. And then about the 3 minute mark, she starts singing. It's crazy. Like, I love stuff like that. And I don't know if she even did that kind of on purpose, thinking most songs aren't this way, but They're not, and that's what makes it cool. Like, and
I hope my sister listens to this.
But what's cool about
it? You're gassing her up.
I'm going to tell you, yeah. The Reuben in the Garden. The song is basically the first part of it. It's sort of a riff-based song. It's a clawhammer banjo, and it's pretty much just her, and she plays it sort of at a certain tempo, which is slow, but it's a medium tempo, I'd say, maybe slow to medium tempo. It's kind of a cool groove for 3 minutes. Then she starts singing, and then the song speeds up, and she's playing like there, because I don't think there's any percussion in that song. She plays it at a fast. Yeah, she plays it at a faster tempo for the rest of the song. It's so cool. And so I'll have to figure out, I love that song, like maybe 10 seconds of it for like a transition between topics. And I don't know how you're going to break this first episode up. But you know,
I don't either. Oh, for those wondering, the person we're talking about is my sister. Her name is Alma Russ. Yeah. She has an album out on Spotify and iTunes if you want to listen to it, so you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, Alma Russ, Next Town. Yeah, it's real good.
I've heard it's really good. It's Next Town album. I've heard it's really good. You'd think I would listen to my sister's album, but I just cannot stand that genre, and I'm sorry. I know I do.
Just
I made her music video.
Just let's do it once.
I know. I made her music video, so I did my part.
I would suggest
listening, I'm a photographer.
Listening to it on CD, because it's way better on CD. They're WAV files, essentially, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do music too, so I always tell people, do you have a CD player in your car? Some people don't, because modern cars now pretty much don't come with CD players.
I mean, yeah, you know? The Prius, we drive Priuses, and we just Bluetooth.
Yeah, so, but it's not as good, because like you're streaming, I'm hoping the streaming gets better, but generally when you stream something, it's at a lower quality, and that does affect, for music, it affects things. Hopefully for talking, not so much, but yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. How are we in this?
You want to sign off with just, you know, we're the film theorists, right? Chloe and Steve
Chloe and Steve and Chloe. I'm not good at this.
We're done with episode -1 or 0, whatever you want to call it.
I think -1 is better. Okay. I like it. It's funny.
We'll go for episode
-1.
We'll go from episode -1 to 1. We'll skip 0.
Yeah, screw 0.
All right. So, I mean, I'm also saying goodbye to you as a telephone call, I guess. So, you want to?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what happens. Like, do I just like?
Or can you stop recording and then we continue to talk? Because I want to see if you can download this. Or I mean, actually, I haven't even eaten dinner. It's 8:23. I probably should go eat.
Okay. Well, this has been the podcast episode. Bye.